I got to open up the mailbox because otherwise I'm going to forget all about it. And then you're going to say, did anybody read Blaine's email?
I'm a little confused by the mailbox.
Well, you see, it's this thing that you get mail in.
Well, what is this New York Comic Con one now, that's on there?
That's because I have, I think, one of my kids registered under the New York Comic Con badge. You have to have a different email address for everybody, and I was running out of email addresses.
Oh, okay, because it says New York Comic Con. Get this man a shield. And I'm like, is this
Comic Con? Comic Con?
Turn me on, Comic Con. And then we got.
You know what? Wait, hold on for just a second.
Oh, what are you cleaning it up?
No, it doesn't.
There you go.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell. Anyways, back to the bins. Listen to The Prophets.
Back to The Prophets. Listen to The Bins.
Listen to them bins.
Listen to them sing. Oh,
sorry. So you were listening to Listen to The Prophets in media res as these guys wanted to introduce the show, but it's my episode, guys. I am J. David Weider. Of course, you can call me Dave. And in rapid fire, I've got Paul Spataro over here. Dr. Bill Robinson over there.
There.
And introducing and with Sir Andrew Leyland right here.
As Savick.
I'm sorry.
I am here.
Now I'm there.
Just keep going.
Ignore them. Keep going.
And on this show, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I think that's pretty much everything in a nutshell. Got that done pretty quickly. Do we have any Star Trek news?
Well, it depends what you consider news. News is a subjective term.
Well, yeah, anything Star Trek happening months in advance, because this is coming out in July. We're recording it at the very beginning of February.
I presume at this point we know more about the Picard show, and Discovery has delivered 2 out of 3 good episodes.
Ooh. Oh, wait a minute. I think I've only seen 2, so I don't...
I've only seen 1.
Yeah, I haven't seen
Are you saying the next one is not good, or one of the...
I am saying that episode 3 did not particularly engage me as much as the previous 2 episodes did.
It didn't tickle your fancy.
It did not tickle my ivories, no.
It's not a Harry Mudd one, is it?
No, it is not a Harry Mudd one, and it's not a bad one, to be fair. It's just there are some elements in it that I just don't care about, and they're picking up some elements from the first season that I also just don't care about. So all told, it was an episode that I wasn't really that particularly engaged by.
Is this Spock in the loony bin?
We have not seen Spock, yes.
Spock, I have to say, I really enjoyed the Harry Mudd minisode.
Hmm?
I think that was the by far the strongest of the minisodes, the Harry Mudd one.
What? I don't know about that.
Which did you think was the best of the minisodes?
I kind of like the one. I like the spoilers. The one with the future one.
The one with the guy from Leverage.
Oh, is that where he's from? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's obviously different opinions are different because that was the one I liked the least.
Okay then. Anyone else want to weigh in on the shorts? That was the one I had the most interest in. The other,
and that's the one that engaged me the least. I was like, who cares about this guy?
Well, all four.
Stop
all
dancing four and get off the screen.
All four of them showed up on Netflix just before the series dropped, so that was nice.
Not over here.
Yeah, you're on that CBS platform bullshit, aren't you?
Which, yes, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. So I signed up. I signed up for CBS All Access again. Preparing to watch this, excited because I'm actually going to watch it on the smart TV because CBS All Access goes through Amazon. So instead of dragging my laptop into the living room so my wife and I can both watch the show, fire it up. Turns out CBS All Access only works on certain platforms. Smart TVs, not one of them. So my Amazon Prime app on my TV, negative. You can get to it, but when you go to play, it's not available. So thank you, CBS. Thank you for that.
Is it play on a Fire Stick?
It should play on a Fire Stick, but I'm not going to buy more equipment just to watch a show I'm already paying to see.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
So does it work on a not-so-smart TV? Okay, I'll play over here.
Well, no, it's like my Blu-ray player and my smart TV both have the Amazon Prime app. I can watch anything on Amazon Prime without an issue. It's specifically CBS All Access.
But wait, aren't they, yeah, they're...
Well, Bill, you're making his brain explode.
No, but aren't they promoting that through Amazon? So shouldn't you therefore be able to play it through Amazon on anything?
Not on anything. I can watch it on my PC, which doesn't help.
Once again,
I'm dragging
ridiculous.
My PC into the living room, hooking it up to the HDMI, and then using those controls.
Bah, technology.
Which, again, I'm paying for the subscription, which I immediately canceled at that point because I'm not going to be kowtowing to that.
Good for you. I approve.
But yeah, that's my little rant.
It was a little rant.
It was just a small rant.
Justified rant.
It's a little bitty rant.
Ms. Tessmacher's got her own rant.
What is it? Tessmacher Peaks or something like that?
Yeah. If they want you to pay for their streaming service should be every bit as user-friendly as other streaming services. Mm-hmm. And if it isn't, f*** them.
That's where I went. That was my exact verbiage. Just more of it.
Yeah, I seem to remember those words.
Yeah, among other words that can't be said on a PG-13 podcast.
Well, I just said them, so...
Well, you got our one.
Yes, but all they heard was boop.
All right, okay.
You turned into Captain Pike.
Shut up!
I mean, we'll probably talk about it more when we do our wrap-up of Discovery episode, but my God, Anson Mount is brilliant as Captain Pike.
Yes, oh, yeah. Yes.
I didn't know he could speak.
Well, I was telling...
Did you ever see him in Hell on Wheels?
No.
Oh, okay.
The only thing I ever saw him in was The Inhumans.
Yeah, it's the first thing I saw him in, too. So, yeah, he's much better as Pike.
He's brilliant as Captain
Although
Pike.
I didn't mind him as Black Bolt. I thought he was a good Black Bolt.
Well,
I thought he was fine as Black Bolt.
We discussed that on Back to the Bins one time. I think that show was very unfairly criticized. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was entertaining.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. And one of the things I've liked about it so far is that all of the bridge crew now have personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But enough about Discovery, because we'll do all that later on.
Yes, we will.
We shall. Thank you. Thanks to the kindness of others.
I don't think I have any other Star Trek stuff. Anybody else?
I'm reading Star Trek The Lost Years by J.M. Dillard.
Ooh,
that doesn't count as news, seeing as this book was published, 15 years ago?
More than that.
Oh, at least that, yeah.
I had it in elementary Maybe school, more. So that was in the 80s.
Right, but it's very good so far.
30 years ago.
I'm up to chapter 7. And I like that it follows on, or sets up, I suppose I should say, Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek the Motion Picture novel by having quite a lot of future references to that book. And I'm quite enjoying it so far.
You know that there are subsequent books in that series.
Yeah, I've got... Hold on a second.
Isn't
I've
there
got
three,
one of the
three
others.
Total?
Is it called Discovery by J.M. Dillard? I've got that one.
I'd have to double check it. There's A Flag Full of Stars. I know that one. And I think Recovery.
See, what I would like in the prequel is, I forget what the character's name is. Was it Sonak or whatever? The Vulcan that's going to be the science officer. If every time he's in the scene, he just makes the noise that he does in the... That. Like it turns out that had nothing to do with him being transported and killed. That's just the sound he makes.
I think I heard Alvin make a noise like that once, and I kind of was like, oh my God, what is that? We have a transporter accident in the garage?
Well, it's filling in a lot of the what's it for the motion picture, because one of the things you don't know from the film is that the woman who dies on the transporter pad is Kirk's wife, who he just meets her in this book. Susan Sullivan, everybody. Mm-hmm. Castle's mum.
That's his wife.
Yeah, that's his wife.
And he like gets over it in like a minute.
Well, you see, according to Gene Roddenberry's batshit crazy novelization of Star Trek the Motion Picture, we have multiple sexual partners in the future, but you can still choose to marry your favorite one.
Of course,
and also according to Gene, you can choose your surname, you can choose your name. You're not linked to having a family name anymore.
Well, you're not. You can do that now.
Yeah, you can do that now, but it's uncommon to have your family name in the future, where James T. Kirk still has the name he was born with, because he's a bit of a throwback, apparently.
It's kind of stupid, but whatever.
Or you can be Vulcan and only go by one name.
But the other one's unpronounceable.
Yeah.
You'd start to believe that Kirk has, you know, no ability to mourn when somebody passes away. His brother dies, he's over it in no time. His wife dies, he's over it in no time. But Spock dies, he goes into like a deep depression.
Edith Keeler dies and he's beside himself.
For an hour, but then next week he's fine.
I never knew that was supposed to be his wife.
Yeah.
I don't think that adds to the story at all. I think that just seems like unrealistic that he would just be like, oh yeah, it's sad they died. Okay, yeah, so anybody got a soda?
Well, in the film, I would argue with you that it doesn't matter because you don't know that it's his wife. In the novel, that's fleshed out a lot more.
Yeah, and giving it the backstory kind of ruins the film. It doesn't ruin the film scene, but it makes the novelization seem unrealistic because of the way he reacts in the film.
So wait, Susan Sullivan was married to James T. Kirk and David Banner?
Yes. Well, okay. She never married David Banner.
Did she not?
No. Susan Sullivan was Elena Marks. He was married.
You're right.
To the girl from Dark Shadows.
Yeah. Never mind. So, what's happening?
Righty. So, Orville.
No, Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
I can see how you'd get those two confused.
Yeah. I don't know why. Oh, all I have to say about the most recent episode this week is that they gave Bordis a mustache.
Does he look like Tom Selleck? Tell me, yes, excellent.
It's a big Tom Selleck mustache. He's like, he goes into the doctor and says, "I wish to have a mustache." Oh, well, I could stimulate your follicles. You should have it about an hour. Then he walks back on the bridge later. He walks in and because it was, of course, who do you think goaded him into getting a mustache?
The pilot. God.
Yes. Because he's like, it looks great, buddy. And then
I don't want to see any more of his holodeck experiences. So I gotta tell you.
The holodeck porn episode was quite fun.
I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't see that episode, and I'm not going to discuss it because it led. I'm not going
to
say.
I heard that afterwards, the holodeck started to try and ransom him.
Yep.
The send of emails for bitcoins. Space bitcoins.
I'm very much been enjoying it, and I think it's taken a step up in terms of the quality of its visual effects. I mean, they weren't bad last year, but this year they really do look quite cinematic. And I follow Seth MacFarlane on Twitter, and he was saying that they've made some deal with the advertisers to pump more money into the show for a sponsorship deal or something. So the episodes are now 47 to 48 minutes instead of 42 to 43.
Mm.
It also feels to me like they've de-emphasized Seth MacFarlane slightly, and they're paying more attention to the supporting cast than to him.
Which I think is a very good thing, because I've said this before, but I think he's the weak link. I know it's his show, he created it, so he can give himself whatever part he wants. I think he would have been better served playing the pilot role, and they should have got somebody in who is a better dramatic actor than he is for the lead role. He never sells the dramatic stuff to me. I'm always expecting a punchline because of his background as a comedic actor and Family Guy and all that stuff. And I just think an actor who can do comedy and drama, a Tom Selleck in his prime, if we're talking about Tom Selleck, would have been better as the captain rather than Seth MacFarlane. But that's just me. Other people think he nails it, so.
Well, the way I look at it is, I think he's doing okay, but then whenever he does one of the one-liners, it's like, oh, you were so close. You were doing it, and then you had to throw in that joke, and it's like, oh, yeah, you're Seth MacFarlane. Yeah.
Speaking of, we can link Magnum PI to the Orville. If you are interested in what the security officer, the little, is it Alara, played by Halston Sage, if you're interested in what she looks like without all that makeup, she was recently in an episode of Magnum PI 2.0.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Or as I refer to it, Higgins, wonderful person.
Oh, wow. Sorry. I just looked her up.
Bill will be in his bunk.
Well, see,
Bill's
now they have...
Bill's headed to the holodeck.
Well, now they have a new security officer.
I have not met said... the only one I've seen is the wonderful Patrick Warburton as the guy with the big elephant nose, and I love him. He's brilliant. But anyway, enough. The Orville is not Star Trek.
And it's also 5 months after the fact.
That's true.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
Sorry, love the listeners.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Seth MacFarlane was dating her?
Apparently. Nobody has said that's why she's left the show.
Why, did they break up?
Yes.
Oh.
Now
she left the show.
allegedly, Seth MacFarlane has extremely good relationships with every one of his exes, so we have no reason to believe that this is any different, but they did an exceptionally good job of keeping secrets a major player leaving.
Does he give them the Derek Tudor parting gift?
The gift bag?
Yeah. So, just saying, it would be amusing.
Deep Space Nine.
Hey, you guys complain we never have news, you know? All right. So anyway.
Yeah, but the Orville's not Star Trek news, to be
I
fair.
Know.
Anyway, all right. Okay. Who's on synopsis duties today?
That's me.
That would be Dave, wouldn't it? All right. Well, take it away, Dave.
This time around, we are looking at Impact Noir.
No warning. We're out there somewhere. No mercy.
He's coming after us.
From a deadly predator, there's no escape. On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Noir?
I say the same thing, Dave. Don't worry about it.
I think it's Empire Noir, because it's Terek Noir.
Yeah, it's nothing like Empire Records.
Empire Records, where Garrett goes every week to pick up his new releases. Can I get to see Worf leafing through the Klingon opera section on the original vinyl?
So we are in Season 5. This is Episode 24. We are near the end of Season 5. This episode was directed by Mike Vihar, with a story by Brian Fuller, but the teleplay was by Hans Beimler?
Bueller.
This originally dropped the week of May 19th, 1997. Andy, do you remember where you were?
No.
Probably better that way.
I haven't got a clue.
Me neither. Oh, wait, I would have been almost... Yeah, I was on my way to graduating high school. Not to the day, but pretty close. And that's depressing. Anyway, Kira, Dax, and Worf arrive at Quark's to find it strangely empty. Why is that strange? Soon discovering that the other customers have been driven away by noisy work, Chief O'Brien and Nog are performing in a nearby conduit. When attempts to repair the conduit fail, O'Brien realizes it will need to be replaced, and as a replication is impossible, he suggests they mount a salvage expedition to Deep Space Nine's sister station, Impact Noir, which we have never heard of, and which the Cardassians abandoned a year prior. The salvage team consists of O'Brien, Garrick, Nog, and, you know, there's some people that have names, but let's be honest, they're red shirts.
And four other people that we have never seen before.
Hey, Pacetti, Botox, something and something.
Pacetti, Bokta? Yeah, exactly. And security officer Stolzoff and Amaro. Bokta.
Kakalaka. Oh, wait. Kakalaka is the next episode.
Yeah. As Cardassians routinely booby-trap abandoned facilities against non-Cardassian intruders, Garrick is brought along to help disarm the security measures. On the abandoned station, the team discovers two empty and recently deactivated stasis tubes. No, technically they discover three, and one happens to have a... Oh, never mind, it's there. And a third one with a dead Cardassian soldier whose uniform marks him as a member of an elite and ruthless battalion.
The A-team.
Yep. You can.
I was thinking the Listen to the Prophets crew.
No, you can. If you can find these guys, and you've got enough money, you may be able to hire the A-team.
And if you can pay Dr. Bill's food writer.
Right. Suddenly, the way your food writer consists of piss warm Mountain Dew and tacos. Oh, that's mine. Wait.
Never let it be said that Bill is not a cheap date.
Yeah. Suddenly, the away team's runabout detaches from the station and explodes, stranding them inside with no means to send for help. The team split into groups to continue the salvage and attempt to establish communications.
Actually, always a good move.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I'm kind of an expensive date. Whatever.
I have been out with you. No, you're not, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. You got me there.
The recently awoken Cardassian soldiers methodically ambush and eliminate Pacetti and Stolzoff, a.k.a. Redshirt number 1 and number 2. Rather than remaining with the others, Garrick decides to go on the offensive and track down the enemy soldiers himself, because let's be honest, that's going to go well. He returns after eliminating one of them and relays his discovery that the soldiers had been subjected to psychotropic drugs, which... Psychotropic drugs, which amplify their...
What's a drug?
You slip it to somebody at a party? No, don't do that.
No.
Psychotropic drugs, which amplify their natural xenophobic tendencies. Interesting. He then disappears.
You give them the drugs and they go in the... Okay.
He then disappears to find the remaining adversary. The rest of the team continues their tasks, noting Garrick's ruthlessness and unusual behavior, yet doing nothing about it. Let's just point that out. The second soldier ambushes Bokta. But Garrick emerges and kills him before he can kill Amaro, only to stab Amaro himself. O'Brien and Nog discover Amaro, who tells them what happened, and then dies from his injuries, conveniently. Thank you for that exposition before passing out and dying. O'Brien realizes...
My last grenade
O'Brien realizes Garak has been affected by the same drug as the soldiers and sets out to stop him. Garak, meanwhile, sets a trap, captures Nog, and then uses him to draw O'Brien out.
Yeah, he doesn't kill Nog. He killed everyone else, but he doesn't kill Nog.
That's because he's restoring regular status.
And really, yeah, I mean, Nog is the first one I'd kill. Let's be curious.
But he says he has to hold back. You know, you don't know how much, you know, I'm... Whatever. Because he wants to shoot him, but he says he needs him as bait.
Slow your roll. We're not discussing the episode yet.
Oh, sorry.
O'Brien consents to lay down his weapons and face Garak in hand-to-hand combat, but disables him with his own trap, having rigged his phaser to overload and explode. The three are rescued, off-screen, having collected the parts they needed, conveniently, but at a terrible price. Back on DS9, O'Brien visits Garak in the infirmary. Garak expresses his sincere regret, and O'Brien informs him that there will be an inquest. Garak remarks that he is lucky
Inquisition,
that the
here we go.
Garak remarks that he is lucky the phaser blast didn't kill him, which O'Brien reveals, in fact, was the way it was intended to go. Everybody dances and has a good time, and the episode ends.
And they all go to a space rave on Impok Nor. With the psychotropic drugs.
Let me get this straight. Garak kills a Deep Space Nine Starfleet security guard in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. We don't care. He's just going to apologize to his wife and everything's going to be fine.
No, he doesn't apologize. He sends O'Brien.
You go say you're sorry.
Yeah.
You go say you're sorry right now.
You go say you're sorry for me, because I don't think she'd want to hear it from me. You fucker.
If you don't apologize, I will have to... Well, I'm not going to do anything.
I mean, if we go by the motion picture novel that we were talking about earlier, Amaro's wife probably has a couple on the side anyway, so...
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Go on, Dave. It's your show, this one, so what did you think?
It's conflicting. I've been running this through my head because there are good elements to this episode, but it never quite comes together. It does not gel.
No, I'm in exactly the same position you're in.
Yeah.
I'm in a similar position, but I enjoyed it. I understood, like, it never totally felt like it made sense, but really? somehow I was able to just kind of dive into it and say, okay, you know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of, you know, the Garak as serial killer, you know, seeing him and his tendencies set free, and I could just enjoy that, his darker side. Mm. So
yeah,
I was able to kind of immerse myself in that and enjoy the episode, even though, like, I didn't want to think about it too much.
Okay. It's a locked room mystery. It's a haunted house story. It's every other episode of Doctor Who where they're trapped in a location and they can't get out, and they pick them all off one by one. On the one hand, the people that die were no surprise whatsoever. I'm watching this with Angela, and even she's like, so we're never going to see those four again. Yeah. And the fact that it did nothing at all to surprise in regards to that is a negative point. On the other hand, it's incredibly well directed. It's very atmospheric. It's well acted. And I think we're at that point in Deep Space Nine now where even a below average script like this one is elevated by the cast and the crew who managed to. It's this show's version of Rascals. It doesn't deserve to be as good as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with that. I kind of, you know, I think it's as good as it is because of Andrew Robinson's acting and just, you know, how scary he becomes when he's cut free of all restraint. And you see, you know, what he must have been like when he was, back in Cardassia and ruthless. So to me, that's the whole thing. And honestly, I don't see how O'Brien is ever defeating him, even though they had him defeat him.
Well, that's because of the drugs. He was,
I don't see it
off his game because of the drugs, maybe. I had a nitpick in when they first gets to the station, but I would assume Garak would have codes to bypass it. The fact that Garak goes over in a Federation spacesuit with Federation weaponry, wouldn't that have tripped something like, oh, we're detecting Federation technology? But I'm assuming Garak would have been able to bypass whatever would have gone off because of that. Like, he specifically went over there because he was Cardassian. So it's like, yeah, but you're in Federation tech. So I was like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Doesn't mean Cardassians wouldn't steal and use Federation tech. I think they would bypass that.
True. Yeah, it was the shuttle full of, extras.
Yeah.
He needed to go over and get the Cardassian goober.
I understand that reference.
And you're going to die, and you're going to die.
I was also unclear as why the Cardassians left three Cardassian soldiers there in cryogenic freeze if they'd abandoned the station, stripped the station, and booby-trapped it anyway. So if no one had gone to this station, would they have just remained in cryogenic freeze forever?
Well, not the third one, but yeah, the other two would have for an extended period of time. Did they mention why they left the station in the first place?
No, it's just it was abandoned because we want to have a sister ship so we don't have to build some new sets.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I think that is really what it comes down to.
We're just going to turn the station on its side and put it in a different space location.
Which would make no difference with artificial gravity!
Yeah, I was going to point that out that I didn't like that they played that card. But that's because, you know, coming from Babylon 5, which is around at this point, they used a lot of the three-dimensional space elements. Star Trek's never been great at that.
No, because Babylon 5, they did establish that the station rotates to create its own gravity, and there are sections of the station that have lower gravity areas. Like when Bruce Boxleitner, when Sheridan jumps out of the shuttle in the elevator, in that episode, there's a bomb in the elevator. He's able to survive long enough to be rescued because he's in an area of the station with a lower gravity. So although he's falling very slowly. They never do that on Deep Space Nine.
No.
Or Empath Noir.
Empath Noir, you are the greatest dancer.
Well, you know, it made me think that one of the suggestions or theories about what Quentin Tarantino's script was that would have been R-rated for Star Trek was more because of horror elements. And I'm like, yeah, I can see it with an episode like this one, that you can integrate different genres into Star Trek's framework. And it can work. And this episode doesn't quite hit that height because I think it's restrained by the network and, of course, the syndication. You don't know what time this is going to be playing. But I think the idea was better than the execution.
So, no, see, I think the other way around. I think the execution of this episode is much better than the idea.
And I'm somewhere in the middle because I think the idea was fine. They just didn't flesh it out in a way that I kind of went along with. But the acting then brought it back up.
I mean, at least with the red shirts, who aren't red shirts because they wear those boring grey and black uniforms now, at least they all are actually given a personality. Mm-hmm. So they're not just bumped off unceremonially and we don't really care about them. We actually learn that Pachetti has a hobby and back to tank's a bit of a coward, and one of the security guards is a bit too gung-ho, which is probably what gets him killed.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about the first red shirt ever on... the Man Trap.
Yeah,
that they have so little respect for him that they believe he'd just come out and eat some strange plant and die. Like, you know, when you said that at least these ones have personality, I'm thinking how little personality this guy had. That it's like, okay, oh, you left him outside. He ate a plant. Of course, he's dead. I don't know. Just trying to, or not trying to, but I'm just tangenting off in my own mind.
So, all right. I'm glancing over synopsis, a different one, and I guess I picked up on a thing. So the question is, how did Garak go all psycho? Where did the drugs come from?
Like in the Naked Time, it's just lying on a staircase somewhere, and he puts his hand on it.
Mm-hmm. Is it lying on a staircase, or was it in this broken? All right, because remember, one of the three stasis tubes is broken open, because I'm reading in the synopsis says the stasis tubes are partially filled with an unknown blue biogenic substance. So I think the drugs were in the stasis tubes as part of the booby trap, and when the one that one was
booby,
no, he touched the staircase and pulled it back, and it looked like he had gum on his hand. That's what the drug looks like.
Then he spends the next couple of scenes scratching his hand in exactly the same manner they do in the Naked Time.
But it probably came from that was when they went in that room. So the drug that affected him came from the broken stasis tube. And I guess I didn't. At least that's what I'm.
Yeah, it could be that the third guy who came out of the stasis tube when he stumbled that goo on the staircase that Garrett then touches.
Yeah, because it was broken by that I-beam and the gas got out and just sprayed all over the room. And then when he comes in the room, when Garrett came in the room, he touched it. And that's why it started to affect him.
Yeah, I was
how much cooler would this episode have been if Nog had touched that stuff? Given that Nog at this point is very gung-ho to prove himself, Nog going all John McClane would have been actually really cool, and Garak has to stop him.
But maybe it's a substance that only affects Cardassians.
It could
I see what you're saying. Maybe if Nog, had gone nutso.
I think this episode just more. I think this episode just got ruined for me even more.
Because,
Naked Time and Naked Now. This is the end of the trilogy, guys.
I'm not willing to line it up with those two. I don't see. Well, first of all, Naked Time I'm fine with. It's Naked Now that I'm just kind of very down on because it was just such a ripoff of it. I don't see this as a ripoff of that, even though I do not argue with the similarities that you're mentioning as you talk about it. I just don't think, you know, it's not the same story just rehashed. It's
not a ripoff. We didn't get that cheesy musical cue, you know.
Nor was Garrick running around without a shirt and a fencing foil.
You know, if Garrick had started singing "Take Me Home, Eileen," then I would have been done.
Yeah, apparently Andrew Robinson wasn't happy that he had to portray Garrick as a psychopathic killer because
right.
He kind of wanted to get away from that after Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
And yet I love him in Dirty Harry, as we're all well aware.
He's fantastic in Dirty Harry. He was a bit disappointed that they went down that well. I think he's the episode's saving grace. Well, him and Cold Meaner.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think they're both really good in this episode because you've got the juxtaposition of Garrett going all batshit crazy against Cold Meanie's, I just want to do my job and go home.
I wonder if that's why Andrew Robinson took the role of Liberace.
To get away from the Dirty Harry image.
Yeah.
I don't think so, only because I don't think Andrew Robinson was so in demand at that point that, that he had the luxury of just trying to change his image. I'm sorry. I'm just totally losing it there. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Andrew Robinson has never been the, you know, oh, you got to sign him at all costs actor. He's a great actor, but he's never been, you know, the star. So I think he's taken whatever roles he's been, you know, had available that he thought he could do something with.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he remembered everything that came across his plate, but you know,
I think in the 80s he probably did, because if you remember, he's got multiple appearances in stuff like the A-Team and the Dukes of Hazzard, where he's just completely wasted. And you do get the impression that in the 80s he kind of had no choice but to take whatever was offered to him so that he could eat, basically.
Eating is good.
Mm.
And it's just when you think about his family background, you would just think there would be a little bit more available to him just based on nepotism alone. But yeah, I guess not.
Right back at you.
Michael Douglas went on to prove that playing Liberace was okay.
I didn't say there was anything wrong with it.
I always
isn't he in that with Scott Bakula? Is Scott Bakula not in that film, or is Scott Bakula in a different one?
I've
never actually seen either of them, so I can't say.
All right, okay.
I only remember. I know it in passing. I don't remember.
Scott Bakula's in a Liberace film.
Really?
I thought it was one with Michael Douglas. I'm sure he is.
Oh, he was in the most recent one with Michael Douglas?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I have never seen it either. But I'm sure that Scott Bakula's in one of them.
Well, now I'm just going to have to look it up. Biopics. Liberace biopics. I know. It's not a Liberace podcast, but somehow it has become that. Matt Damon was in the one with Michael Douglas.
That's right. Okay. I do remember.
What's it called?
Behind
the Candelabra, Scott Bakula played Bob Black, whoever the hell that is.
Oh, okay. Now that we've brought this show to a screeching halt.
That was just, I'm sure Scott Bakula's in one of them. I mean, for the most part, though, this is all right, isn't it?
I thought this had good, I picked up on some of the music in this one, for me, was reminiscent of, and the specific scenes where the music that I'm calling out takes place is just before the Batak and Amaro, when they're in the hallway before Batak gets killed, or Boktox, or Bakakra, or whatever his name is. It reminded me of the John Carpenter soundtrack to The Thing, minus the like ominous music where they're not sure who's who, or they're like walking around the camp and there's that dun dun doo. It was just the second part of that when they was it
bum,
was like
bum bum.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I'm just saying that's kind of like the music in the thing. It's just like that one piano note thing in the thing, isn't it?
Well, I mean, John Carpenter does that. Yeah, but it's not the piano thing. It was the like the synthesizer portion of the more eerie sounding, not just the boom boom. Not the boom boom.
John Carpenter's musical
repertoire
is usually a repetition.
They're catchy.
Yeah,
they're catchy. They'll get in your head.
It is repetitive notes to try and just create tension.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the best one is Halloween. I was going to say Hanukkah, but that's not.
dreidel. Oh.
Michael Meyerowitz has come home again.
He's come home and he's not lighting a menorah. Anyway.
There was some controversy over the Starfleet officer referring to the Cardassians as spoonheads, which apparently is a racist slur, and they weren't entirely sure that Starfleet would make that. I'm looking on Memory Alpha. According to Memory Alpha, that was supposedly just a background piece of dialogue that wasn't supposed to be heard properly and therefore hadn't been approved by either Ira Burr or Rick Berman, so it slipped through. And when they heard it, they were like, oh, all right, we'll leave it in.
Yeah, but when you watch it on Netflix 20-some-odd years later and you've got closed caption on, it's like, oh, well, yeah, look at that.
It's pretty obvious.
Yes.
And it's not that I had a problem with there being four cast members we've never seen before. It's that we knew they were going to die.
Mm.
Yeah, it's okay. I was okay with them dying.
Really think that O'Brien could take Garrick on in hand-to-hand combat?
No.
No. Maybe, well, I was going to say maybe in his prime, but...
No. Because then Garrick would have been in his prime as well.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Right.
Maybe, and I think also Garrick's descent into psychopathy is slightly undermined by the fact that he's doing nothing but needling O'Brien about Celtic Three all the way through the episode.
Yeah.
Even before he gets the goo on his hand.
Right. Well, I mean, but that's just Garrick, you know.
No, I see that as something where, like, the goo is bringing that more out. It's something that's there to begin with, and now the goo is making him.
Well, yeah, because Garrick wants... I mean, let's look at it this way. You know Garrick's bored. I mean, he's sitting on the station. He's stuck on the station, so he is going to get a chance to go out and do something. This is probably exciting for him, and yes, he is. He's trying. He was an operative, so of course he's trying to get information out of. He's keeping his skills up. He's trying to get information out of the chief, or just test himself against him. I mean, what else does he have to do?
Play little mind games with people.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's all he does all the time.
Right. That's all he does, yeah.
Yeah, like I can't remember if we've already done
kinda
that.
Like,
or if I
like
watched
the way
ahead.
Hill does with us.
What? I don't do that. I don't needle you guys. You guys needle me. This is the first time we've seen one of the fancy schmancy environmental suits since the original series.
Only in Web.
Whom gods destroy, it says. That would be the same, but I guess they had him in that episode.
And I mean, it's not quite the same, but I'm thinking of when Chekhov and his captain are on The Wrath of Khan. The environmental suit with the handle in the front.
Yeah, with the convenient
handle. Oh, but yeah, this is in a Star Trek episode. So yeah, they did, with the convenient handle on the front to lift them up into the air and wave them
Captain
off.
Captain Terrell, by the way. Nobody has to email in to tell me the name. Sorry, Tissim, if I'm taking away your email.
Terrell, shoot him now. I'm trying, but I can't. It's hard. It's hard to kill him.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this really isn't a character study because it's, bringing out something that he wouldn't have done. What it's doing is it's freeing inhibitions and amplifying thoughts.
It's a character study in that is compared a little bit to like the Lower Decks episode from TNG because we do find about the not main, that there's other people with personalities on the station in Starfleet. One guy likes to collect, he wants to collect the badges. We don't need no stinking badges, but there's more than just our main cast. There's other people with other little ticks and quirks. He gives us a little insight. Of course they all die, but
of course they do.
Is that bad?
Well, I thought Well, but isn't there a little bit of Pacelli, whatever his name is, the guy that wants to collect stuff? That would be us. We'd be on their nerds, nerding out, going, ooh, look, a regimental banner. Ooh,
there's no question we'd all be red shirts.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably a red shirt.
Speaking of yourself, I'd be Bashir's dad.
You'd be what?
I'd be Dr. Bashir's dad. I'd be that guy who just went from job to job going, oh, well, I've done that for a bit.
You'd be Brian Jordan, waving your finger at me.
Yes.
I'd be happily be a red shirt.
Andy Leyland is a very, very bad man. He'd be doing the finger thing. He'd be hanging out on DS9 with Seinfeld.
I'd happily be a red shirt in Next Generation era.
Yeah.
So he's Bashir's dad. He's Seinfeld's one of his enemies, and he's Raj's dad from Big Bang Theory. And he's Andy on our show.
Yeah. I am a prolific it's that guy actor.
God, now all I hear is a Seinfeld. I'm gonna keep hearing the Seinfeld scene the next time I watch DS9.
Next episode would be perfect for that.
Oh,
oh my gosh! Okay, I gotta hold that for next episode.
Yeah, hold on to that.
Yeah,
it's Impact Noir. Yeah, it was. I didn't feel bored watching this episode.
No. I think that's my point. I enjoyed watching this. It didn't always make total sense, but it never. I was never sitting there scratching my head saying, "Why is this happening?" I just ran with it, and I was enjoying the the fact that that Garrick was just kind of off the rails. The only thing about it is, I don't think that O'Brien could take Garrick out, even by subterfuge with the exploding phaser. So it almost struck me as, like Stan Lee writing.
Wait a minute, what do you mean?
Spider-Man against the Silver Surfer.
He could take him. He took him because he was off his game. That's the way I look at it.
Well, he's off his game, and O'Brien's in his element. He didn't use sheer force.
Right.
He used engineering.
He got knocked down.
It's the power of math, people.
And he got back up again. You're never going to keep O'Brien down.
I just don't see that actually happening.
What? What?
I think Garrick is a far superior...
Yes, and if he was in his right mind.
If he's in his right mind and he was going about this, Nog would have been dead.
Everybody would have been dead. O'Brien would have lost. Yeah. Yes.
So your thought process is, I should just accept any weakness to Garrick's behavior because he's not in his right mind, and therefore we could do anything we want with the script.
I think you're underestimating O'Brien as well. O'Brien has been in back against the wall multiple times.
Look, man, O'Brien's been around. He lived a whole nother lifetime in prison, man.
Yeah,
he's got new skills.
You know what?
O'Brien, he'll snap your neck for a loaf of bread, dude.
O'Brien, you walk in. It's almost like the Picard "I surrender" moments. You go to O'Brien. You say, "Get into that torture chamber right now," and he just goes. He sinks his head low and walks in.
All right.
The sad music on the da 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 da.
He's the buzzard from Bugs Bunny.
He's more Eeyore.
He's the cat that has to go when the Warner Brothers cartoon where the cat has to spin the wheel, where the dog's like, he has to spin it, then he has to go to the filing cabinet to pick out his torture. Now, oh my God, not the thinker. That one.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking.
The cartoon I'm talking about, right?
Yes. I'm thinking of Killer the Buzzard from Bugs Bunny.
No, that's.
My mama done told me. No, but when he comes in, he sings, "My mama done told me to bring home a rabbit."
Okay, maybe that is the same music. Sorry.
But I think you hit on something, actually, that Garrick is in a weakened state. He's not going about things the way he normally would, because why is he hanging Starfleet officers down a hallway, except to psych out O'Brien?
Yeah, that's a little bit. It's Christmas time in Impact Noir.
Well, that, and I guess Garrick had been watching. He'd been watching Apocalypse Now or something. He's got like an ear necklace.
Rathacon. Yeah. Well, then it would be upside down if it was Rathacon, and it would smack you in the face with their bloody arms. Oh God, that's.
Which, if you've read the Wrath of Khan novelization, there's a lot more to those characters.
As it turns out, one of them is Kirk's wife.
One of his other wives.
Every scene when somebody gets killed in the novelizations, it's Kirk's wife.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute.
It was the episode when Kirk's wife drowned in the swimming pool.
Oh my god.
Oh, I went there.
Well, Paul, you beat me there because that's where I was going too. When I was like, wait a minute. Kirk's wives, William Shatner, Kirk's wife. Miramani was killed. Hey, wait a minute. Don't date Kirk.
Antonia wasn't killed that we know of. We don't know who she is, but...
That's because even he doesn't give a shit about Antonia.
I think Antonia's the one in the pool. Oh, sorry.
Allegedly. Let me just add that. Allegedly, we are not implying anything.
Oh, you know, I did have some Star Trek news. No, because it ties directly into this. I was watching TV, and there's a guy that lives locally here, like in Clearwater or St. Pete. He's the guy that's trying to prove he's William Shatner's son. Still.
And they found him hanging from something.
He was at the bottom of a pool. Oh, sorry. No, no, he's like, oh, you know, I'm
Kirk's son.
I was like, dude, what are you going? He's like my age or older. He's like, I just want him to admit that he's my father. Like, what are you? I'm not trying to get anything. Then shut up and go away. Who cares at this point?
Sure you're not.
You know, just take a DNA test. Just, you know, like he couldn't find, you know, some DNA from William Shatner. I mean, he's met him, for God's sake.
It's laying on every doorknob you look at.
So anyway. I guess we've exhausted all of what we think. Is this where we find out what Blaine thinks?
And I wonder, still I wonder, who'll read from Blaine. That's my newest Blaine song. So Blaine says, hi guys. This is one of the highlights of the season. I wish Garrick had been exposed to the psychotropic compound in the actual meta lab instead of finding a random blob of it on the staircase, as that's the kind of thing you'd expect them to handle carefully. But I can't complain about the execution of the rest of the episode. O'Brien's past is clearly haunting him, and I like how his engineering life overcomes the soldier life. This is a great thriller, more tense than some major Hollywood movies I've seen in the genre. Blaine.
I think Blaine knocked my rating up at least half a point.
But I think Blaine, in a paragraph, has kind of said what I thought. You know, it may not be the most artfully written and executed episode, but it was gripping once it began. And I kind of just, anything about it that just didn't make sense or just didn't feel quite right, it's like, yeah, okay, that's fine, let's go. Wait, oh, look, it's Garrick. You know, so it's fine. So I'm in agreeance with Blaine on this.
Because I did like the O'Brien character arc in this episode, and Blaine, you know, succinctly put it, his new philosophies outweigh his old, or his new methods.
The needs of the one.
Outweigh the needs of the many. Kirk, that doesn't even make sense.
Well, he's very illogical where Spock is at stake.
Ah, his logic is uncertain.
Yeah, that too.
His logic is uncircumcised? What?
I guess we should rate this episode.
You're so crass, Bill.
I was just trying to ignore it and move on, but that's cool. Let's point it out to everybody.
And my plan is complete.
All right.
Mr. Kill your co-host and come take your place by my side.
I think I've landed.
Therefore, I am.
Thank you, Rene Descartes.
I think not. Poof. Bill disappeared in a puff of
light. I drink the before I am.
I think I have landed at about 3.75 as a rating. It's not quite a 4, but it's definitely a little bit better than 3.5.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same place as you. We've picked it apart and said that it does a lot of it that doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't really bring anything new to the trapped in a haunted house horror movie genre. But I wasn't bored by it, and I was entertained by it, and it fairly paced through its 45-minute running time. So I reckon, I think it's a 3.5, 3.75, around there, yeah.
No, not around there. I have a spreadsheet here. Give me a number.
3.65.
All right, 3.5.
Got a spreadsheet here. I got numbers.
I'm going to write 3.5, 3.75, whatever. I have a space of about 4 characters to put in your rating, and somehow
it's an Excel spreadsheet. You can put anything you want in there.
Just give me normal ratings and stop being such a prima donna. I'm gonna say 3.5 on it myself. I think it's slightly above average because it's exciting to watch, but it's not perfect because there's things about it that just don't sit right. So 3.5. Bill, give me some stupid number now.
Bill's log. Rating 3.743474.1.
Bill rates this one as pie.
I think I have done that before. Pie. But pie. Pie is good. I'm going to give this... Oh, see, I don't know whether to give it 3.7... No, I'm trying to think of, like, what... I know my...
Trying to think, and my head hurts.
My number is 3.75, but I don't know if it's hanging Starfleet officers or missing Kotra pieces or Kotra pieces, the little game that they were playing.
There's a big difference between those two, Bill. Which one do you want in your house? You know what? Don't answer that.
Okay, I won't. Say, Paul, you don't save, like, you don't put, like, 3.75 and then what I say. You just put the number, right?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
I only have so many spaces.
I would be curious to see the...
And only so much time.
Time.
And only so much interest.
Oh.
Time is the fire in which we burn.
Thank you, Dr. Soren.
Time, what has become of me?
Are you doing the Bangles?
Ticking.
Well, I'm doing the Bangles or I'm doing Simon and Garfunkel, whichever you prefer. I'd rather do the Bangles.
Yeah. Personally, I prefer Simon and Garfunkel, but whatever.
Oh, Paul.
Come on, musically, nah, there's no comparison. Paul Simon was a brilliant songwriter and Art Garfunkel had the voice of an angel.
Yeah, but the Bangles up Steve Van Hoff, so...
Yeah.
I'm not talking about how they looked. I'm just talking about generally who they are.
I will lay me down like a bridge over trouble.
I'm gonna go off on that tangent for just a second and say, listen to the live version of Bridge Over Troubled Water from the concert at Central Park. I think is the single best live musical performance vocally I've ever heard.
Wait, Paul, did you give a number?
Yeah, 3.5.
Oh, okay.
3.5.
That's right. Sorry.
So you take that live version of Bridge Over Troubled Water and you sync it up to City on the Edge of Forever.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So I guess we're kind of done here, aren't we?
Do we have any email for this episode?
I think we do.
I wouldn't know because I can't access the box right now.
Well, you're not.
What's in the box?
Read it because you did the whatchamacallit. You did the synopsis. So someone else has to do the email. Which email should we do? Which is the oldest one in here? I guess that's...
Well, Faith's. Apparently, since I've been...
to Faith's yet?
Since I've been deemed the email inbox idiot, I am not reading anything.
I'm the email inbox idiot.
Yeah, well, referencing Paul's...
Actually, we have Faith's email, which is a time to stand, so we're not up to that. We have Tissum Tissum's email, which is season 6, episode 8, so we got a while to get to that. And then we have Tissum Tissum's season 5, episode 11, so there we go. We have one email that we can actually read. And as always, Tissum Tissum is really Ben, but we just like to say the name that way. And it is commenting on the darkness and the light. And Tissum Tissum says, listeners, enjoyed the discussion about TDATL. Kind of an episode that one keeps thinking about, huh? And yet I'm thinking, what episode was that again? I agree with all four of you about the ways in which it's exciting, the ways in which it's deeply flawed, and the ways in which the messy ending is and isn't appropriate. Is Kira backsliding some since Duet and Second Skin, where she learns some of the same lessons as Duet? I kind of think it makes sense given the specific circumstances and given that, as pointed out, she's had years to master the ways in which she justifies her terrorist past. One bit of context that may or may not be relevant is that ever since Worf joined the show, a small subsection of the fan base has been arguing that the show was mistreating Kira, softening her too much, setting her up to look bad, focusing on her solely as a potential romantic conquest for the likes of Odo and Dukat, and basically diminishing her. The writers, these fans argued, had regrettably decided that it was now the testosterone-fueled era of bald Sisko and Worf kicking ass, and that there wasn't room for the strong female characters on DS9 anymore. I never really bought into that criticism of Season 4 personally, with the sole exception of the episode Crossfire. Kira mostly still seems like Kira, in my opinion. But Kira fans who did feel that way were definitely cheering episodes like this one for showing that she hadn't gone too soft soft and civilized, and was still mad as hell and unwilling to take it. Now, I'm a little unnerved to hear that you'll probably be critical of The Begotten, an episode that I've always quite liked. You'll never see a better performance opposite a glass of goop than Aubinjois gives here, and his last few scenes where Odo wears his heart on his sleeve are devastating. One bonus, I guess, is the fact that the episode saddles itself with a B story so cringeworthy that I credit it for the fact that we never see Shakar again. Good riddance to this version of the character. Although I thought he was okay in his eponymous episode. Also of note, although I never thought of it that way, I recently saw someone describe The Begotten as successfully sneaking a gay parenting allegory into the Trekverse. I never thought of that way either. That'll make me see the episode with fresh eyes next time I rewatch it. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait for your episode to come out before we can say anything more. Best, Ben. And looking at our spreadsheet on The Begotten, which I believe aired recently, I was the highest on it that I gave it a 2.5. The rest of you boys all gave it a 2. And I seem to remember the low ratings really were on the secondary plot that just dragged the whole thing down. It wasn't so much the prime storyline that bothered everybody, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It was the unevenness between the two storylines.
That's it for email.
So now, Bill, I can move that
email into the podcast email, not in the inbox now. You see how that works?
Paul, now you're just being mean. What are we doing next time?
Next time, our all-new episode.
We have another episode coming up.
Damn it.
Next time, on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Look, it's in the cards.
It's priceless.
A 1951 Willie Mays rookie card. This is how I can cheer up my dad.
Everybody wants it.
10 bars.
So!
But to get it...
That baseball card is the answer.
Cisco's son gets in over his head.
Do you want to die?
Could Jake's innocent quest...
It all makes sense now.
You accuse the Kai of kidnapping?
...set off an intergalactic war?
You're starting to go over the edge.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
It's in the Picards.
Hey! Is there a John Luke pick-a-card here?
That could have been a Stan Lee cameo.
Hey, true believer! Are you going to come along next time as we watch Nog and Jake have some excellent action at an auction? Come with us! It'll be great!
That was more Mickey, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to make you shoot thunder and crap lightning!
It's going to knock you into tomorrow.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
All knows all. Paul is wise. Paul is good.
Hail, Paul.
All hail, Paul.
I, for one, welcome my new Paul Master.
The Paul Master. Is it like a Paul Burr?
I was thinking more like Mark Singer is playing Paul in this episode.
In a loincloth.